Good evening. The time is 8 p.m.
QST, QST, QST. This is N7IBV, activating the Palkier Amateur Radio Association General Service Net. This net is held every week at 8 p.m. on Wednesday evenings here on this W4BA repeater, which is located in Warrenton, Virginia. The repeater is owned and operated by the Palkier Amateur Radio Association and uses a PL tone of 167.9 Hz for access. If anyone listening would like additional information, please see our website at w4va.org. The purpose of this net is to provide a forum for general discussion and Q&A regarding topics such as the radio hardware, computer software, antennas, operating procedures, and other similar information related to amateur radio activities. This week we have a handful of announcements. Let me get my calendar up here. I guess the first thing coming up is coming Saturday. There's anybody who wants to attend a group, a casual gathering, I guess, is being held over at Wegmans up in Gainesville. Well, Manassas Park, I think it is, or something, Manassas Lakes. Anyway, you know where it is. It's on 29 North before you get to Gainesville. I don't remember what time. Rich can probably fill us in, or somebody can. So just a casual gathering of whoever in the area wants to attend. So that's coming up this Saturday. Also this Saturday, there's a testing session if anybody is looking to either get a new license, if you're just monitoring, of course, tonight, or if you're looking to upgrade and have prepped for it. 10 p.m. over at the Warrenton Fauquier County Airport Saturday morning. Let's see. Club meeting coming up October 14th, as usual, second Thursday of the month. We need a presentation topic. We thought we had something lined up, but that's going to have to wait for another meeting down the road. Anybody who has any ideas or is interested in something that could be morphed into a 30 to 60 minute presentation, you can either mention it tonight on the net or you can send me an email, and we'll go from there. Let's see, on the 23rd of October is the Great Pumpkin Ride, which we will be supporting with communications from various rest stops and anything else that they need from us at that point. I guess we'll have more details at the club meeting on the 14th, but it basically involves net techniques, a net control operator, and simply checking in and passing information as required from the various rest stops. So your best bet is a good handheld or something portable. Again, we'll have more details here as that approaches. Does anyone else have any announcements that they would like to make tonight? If so, call N7IVV. Okay, I guess we'll go ahead with check-ins. So let me get myself ready here. Okay, check-ins tonight for the net. This is N7IVV. Go ahead.
This is K1HTV.
K4SKT.
KN4SPL.
4KU.
WB8QCN.
WB7RAV.
KO4CLR.
KJ7ATV. No report.
KS1PPY. No comment.
AC4VA.
KO4IUM. No comment.
Okay, hold it there for a moment. Okay, I've got K1HTV, K4SKP. And KN4SPL, KX4KU, WD8QCN, WB7RAV, KO4CLR, K KJ7APV. Becca, I think you said that you were no comment tonight. KS1PPY, Sippy, no comment. AG4BA, Alan. And KO4IUM, Nick, with no comment. Anybody else or corrections? Call now.
K7TRV, no comment.
Give me your last, the last letter on that. Kilo Delta 7 Tango Romeo question mark. Okay, who was the KD7 call, or the 7 call that called in here just now? Go ahead.
K7TRB, it's K7TRB, no comment.
Oh, okay, thanks, Gordon. I put too many characters in your prefix. Very good. Well, thanks for checking in. Let's see. I guess that is all for now for check-ins. Okay, well, let's go ahead and go down the list. Rich, of course, you can correct me on the time or whatever for the for people gathering up there for breakfast on Saturday or whatever they want to eat, if they want to eat. And so anyway, there you go. K1HTV and 7IBB.
Thanks, Brad. This is K1HTV in Amosville, Virginia. Yeah, it will be Saturday, 8:30 a.m., 8:30 at the Wegmans. We meet on the second floor. It's about 8:30. There's a religious group of guys at Bible Readers that they are leaving about that time, so we'll have their table plus another table. I'm not sure if we're going to have as many as last time because I understand there's something going on at Heritage Hunt, which I'm sure Skip will tell us about this weekend. But I'll be there, hopefully a couple others. We'll see you there at the informal breakfast gathering at Wegmans. A couple of the expeditions going on now, 3D2CR, Conway Reef. It was on 17FT4 this evening, was able to work him early evening. And Delta 60 Alpha Charlie and Delta 60 Alpha Delta both had been on. Fairly easy to work. Worked Alpha Charlie, Delta 60 Alpha Charlie on 15 meters. 17 meters and 20 meters sideband. The first tour FT8, 20 meter and sideband. Then this evening, heard the Delta 60 Alpha Delta. This is the Comoros Islands in the Indian Ocean on 40 meters, and was able to work them with 75 watts. So they've got very good ears. Can't complain. And I was using the off center fed 80 meter antenna that I was using for NVIS. It performed better than the higher ZS6BKW antennas for that direction anyway. So other than that, conditions are fairly good. There was a expected magnetic activity because of a coronal hole, which is pretty much centered facing the Earth, so I wouldn't be surprised if conditions get kind of stinko as we get closer to the weekend. Solar flux is starting to climb a little bit. It was down in the 70s, is now in the mid-80s. I haven't looked at it today, but I think things are looking a little bit better. That's it for now. I'll see you guys Saturday if you can make it to the breakfast. N7IVV, this is K1HTV.
Okay, Rich, thank you. Yeah, that jogged my memory. I was thinking about de-expeditions. Is there anybody that you're aware of in the club who has actually participated in a de-expedition in one of the operators?
I don't know of any. If you consider VHF de-expeditionaries, we've got up to Spruce Knob for a de-expedition in the contest. But now, as far as HF de-expeditions, no, I don't know of any. But there may be. Maybe they can come out of the woodwork and make their presence known.
Okay, yeah, I might throw that one out to the mailing list, to the club list. Because I got thinking earlier this evening that, oh, yeah, that might be interesting if somebody's done that. I mean, Andy's presentation, as you've probably heard, I know you have, I've heard other people tell you, was excellent. We really appreciated it. And Arno did a really interesting presentation, almost 2 years ago now, of his experience down in Antarctica doing various measuring and whatnot. Okay, well, moving right along then. K4SKP, Skip, what you got for us? Go ahead.
7IVV, this is K4SKP. Not a whole lot. It's been busy. I did have fun. I didn't come anywhere near Rich's score on the Route 66, but I did have a lot of fun getting those that I could with the antennas that I have. So that was a lot of fun, chasing that around for four or five days. And, I actually have never gotten much on the phone for HF. So I actually had two contacts for HF, and I'm just thrilled because I really haven't been able to work phone very much on HF. So I think with that, I'll give it back to you, Zanette, Brad, N7IBV is K4SKP.
Okay, Skip, thanks for checking in. K4SPL, Bob, what you been up to? Go ahead.
N7IBV, and the net from KN4SPL. Good evening, Brad, and everyone on the net. Let's see, I just kind of want to share some of my beach shenanigans. I tried to do some HF at the beach when me and my wife went down to Surfside Beach, South Carolina. We rented a three-level house about 100 yards off the beach, and I heard good things about, you know, radio propagation at the coastline. So I brought my FT-450, my battery box, my Chameleon M-Pass 2 antenna system, and my computer. And I was really hoping to do some good stuff. So I'm going to keep this short because I could really go on for a bit. But the first day I tried everything out, and I got to preface this with I tested the system out in my front yard before we left, and I had good receive and good transmit. People were hearing me. I was making contacts on FT8, 20, and 40 meters, so I knew the system worked, at least here. That being said, the first day down there was a complete failure. I mean, digital and phone, I couldn't hear anything, hardly anything, and mostly on 20, 30, and 40. And I just scratched my head, and I was thinking that this house had a, you know, it's three stories, but it's on a stilt, so it's really four stories. So they had a patio on the roof, so I took my radio up to the roof, and that's where the shenanigans started the following day. And I will just say this, I set up a 17-foot whip antenna up on the roof with my counterpoise going around the patio, kind of draping off the deck, and I took my analyzer out. The SWR on 20 was great, so I was happy. So I plugged the radio up, plugged the computer up. I was receiving great. I was getting 30 to 40 decodes, and I was very happy. So I decided to try transmit, and once I hit transmit, all the lights on the top floor turned off, fans turned off. Now, mind you, I'm completely separated from the electrical system of the house using a battery, and it turns out I blew the AFCI breaker. I guess since I wasn't properly grounded, and I'm saying that that's why that caused it, everything got irradiated with RFI, so it's the weirdest thing. I stopped the transmission. I will tell you, I stopped it immediately, packed everything up, and just did some 2-meter repeater stuff for the rest of the week because I didn't want to blow up my radio. So I hope I wasn't too long-winded, but I just wanted to share that those shenanigans. So anyway, back to you, Brad, KN4SPL.
Well, yeah, that's kind of interesting. I've not had that experience either. So I've had plenty of RFI getting into electronic equipment, but never that. Well, hey, you know, if nothing else, at least you were at the beach and had good weather, I'm assuming. Didn't have to worry about storms coming in, so. Anyway. All right. KX4KU, Kevin, how are you tonight? Go ahead.
N7IVV, KX4KU, in the net. Good evening, Brad. Thank you. I'm doing well. The one person who's He has been an official de-expedition, but kind of had his own dual de-expeditions. What was Gordon, K7TRB, when he was still working for the government, he would go to all these oddball countries and set up something and work the, he was like his own little one-man de-expedition. But, and he had did a couple presentations for the club that were very enjoyable. Speaking of that, I've gotten the Conway Reef station 3 times so far, 17, 20, and 40. So he seems to be doing a lot of FT8. Let me take a break. And FT4 today has been almost all FT4. I still haven't heard him that way. And he does, it seems like he's doing CW, but it's like, you know, 0400 hour time. So, was messing around getting FL Digi to work on my rig pie, kind of getting ready for the weekend. This weekend, in case you didn't know, is the CQ Worldwide DX RIDI competition. So if you want to give RIDI a shot, you'll find it's actually faster than FT8 as a digital mode. So I was getting the FL Digi to interface correctly with the whole rig pie setup. Was successful in that, and I think that's about it. Thanks a lot for doing that again, Brad, and 7IVZ Cakes for KU back tonight.
Okay, Kevin, well, thanks for that. Yeah, it was interesting chasing him. I mentioned to you that I was still trying to, you know, that I had him on the line and then lost him. And then I got looking at everybody's contacts along the way, and I thought, oh, I'm missing something here. You know, because, of course, we were running Fox and Hound mode. And they weren't sending an RR73 or anything like that. It was just a real quick two-way contact. I guess what they did is they sent, you know, an R and then your signal report, and that was it. You know, and that counts as your contact, and I was waiting for something more. So I had actually picked him up half an hour before I thought I had. So that was kind of neat. By the way, for anybody that doesn't know, Conway Reef is a little speck of nothing in the middle of the Pacific Island. It's, I can't remember now if it's a possession of Fiji or something down there, but you can't even see it. If you go to Google Earth, you can't even see it. It doesn't show up. That was kind of interesting. Okay, and WD8QCN, Steve, I hope you picked up your ZL station that I interrupted you on last night. Go ahead, and 7IVV.
7IVV in the net, WD8QCN. Good evening, Brad. Yeah, no problem. I've worked the ZLs a whole bunch. They're easy. I can work Australia and New Zealand all night from here, but Asia's tough, and Africa's tough for some reason. Europe? South America, North America, Australia, New Zealand, and some of the islands, the South Pacific islands, no problem at all. Work Fiji all the time. Conway Reef was no problem. And I actually want to thank Rich again for the tutelage there on the FT8 Fox and Hound mode. That was great. Picked up Conway Reef right away, and picked up Camaros when I found them on 40 meters yesterday. Also worked Sri Lanka the other day, so bands have been interesting. Not always the high bands, you think. I've worked a bunch on 30 and 40 here lately, so that's been great. Other projects here have been remodeling the shack, tearing up some ancient stinky carpet, getting rid of it, and putting in some nice floor tile, heavy-duty stuff, and about tired of smelling glue fumes, but Just about done. I think I've got about 32 square feet left, and I just got to work around some weird spots here in the back of the room, and that'll be about it. But one more item. I did want to encourage more folks to talk to Sippy and sign up to take one or two nights a month. It's all it takes to relieve the strain on you and a few of the others here that have been doing the yeoman's work on net control. So please sign up with Sippy to be a net control at least one night a month. I'm going to start at that rate here in October and see how my schedule evolves here once I'm back in the office, and we'll take it from there. But the more the merrier. It's not that hard. Sippy sent me the script, and all you got to do is be able to copy calls and enter them into NetLogger and just talk on the radio like this. That's about it. Back to you, Brad, N7IVV in the net, WD8QCN.
Okay, thanks, Steve, and thanks for the plug for NCOs, net control operators, as opposed to non-commissioned officers in the Army. It's easy, and you don't have to worry about coming up with a topic, but if you do and want to, then that's all the better. We seem to manage to talk about things regardless of whether we have a curriculum planned out, so... All right, WB7RAV, Randy, how are you doing this evening? Go ahead.
This is WB7RAV. Not doing too bad. Managed to get my new antenna up and in the sky last week, and was going to go out and tune it today, and that didn't happen yet. So it'll have to wait till, well, we'll see what the weather's like. Other than that, listening to a little bit of HF, got some contacts toward my work all states. Managed to pick up California the other day. Surprised me when he came booming in, and I had a good signal going back to him, but couldn't hear hardly anybody else. But that's what happens. Anyway, nothing else going on here. WB7RAV, back to net.
Yeah, the weather can do that to us. You know, obviously, though, if it was really important, especially if we worked for a living doing it, we would go out and work in the rain or the snow or the ice or the heat, whatever, anyway. But like I've said many times, this is only a hobby. For some people, it's more of a big deal than anything else. Now I remember, I was sitting here racking my brain. There was something I was going to mention. Happy first day of autumn. Fall, actually, the really more correct thing is happy equinox, autumnal equinox, and I was in a discussion with my dentist yesterday, and he says, so what's going on tomorrow, and I said, it's the equinox at about 3:30 in the afternoon, and he was impressed that I had the time now, but his comment was simply going to be that there's going to be, you know, equal daylight and night. Well, you know, that's not officially correct, because I've looked at all these calendars and calculators and everything, and we never actually get 12 and 12. And the explanation is really not that long, but I'll just quickly summarize even that. But it has to do with the diffraction of the light through the atmosphere as the sun sets and rises, and it also depends on the latitude that you're at. Because it takes the sun longer to set. So it's kind of interesting to see that. But the bottom line is that at the equinox, the axis of the Earth is completely parallel to the sun. It's tipped neither to or away. And anyway, so there you go. Happy equinox. Where are we here? KO4CLR. Great, Alexi, go ahead.
KO4CLR, Brad, thank you again for hosting the net. Not much to report. I will say at night, the 2-meter bands as far as DXing have opened up. I know KS1PPY is on listening with no comment, but I believe his friends in Western PA, the long-distance guys that using 5 to 10 watts, have been on very late at night, calling on 5-2, so I don't know if you want to participate in that. Other than that, just been just making my rounds on 2 meters digital and listening in there, and was thwarted again from taking a test this weekend by work, but I will persevere and test up the general soon. Anyway, I wish everyone a wonderful weekend. It's supposed to be nice weather. Anyway, KO4CLR clear, back to that.
Okay, thanks, Alexi. This is N7IVV, and this is the FARA General Service Net. We hold this every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Moving along down to AG4BA. Alan, good to have you with us tonight. Go ahead.
Good evening, Brad. Good evening to everyone on the net. This is AG4VA, Alan in Ivy, Virginia. Well, those of us who have been pretty active in Summits on the Air got together back in May in Bridgewater. We had a little workshop at a pavilion in the morning, and we had about 30 people show up. And then that afternoon, we went out and activated a number of summits. We had about 9 hams on 6 summits that afternoon, and everybody had so much fun with that, we thought we'd do it again. So this October 23rd, about a month from today, we're going to meet at a pavilion in Montgomery Hall Park and talk about SOTA and meet the folks who are fairly active on the summits or chasing from about 9:30 to noon. And then we're going to break for lunch. And those interested can go out and activate a summit like we did before. Or if folks don't want to travel to Stanton, people can just go out and go straight to a summit around 2. And I'm sure you'll hear plenty of activity that day. And if folks want to even stay at home and chase from your shack, there will be a lot of folks on VHF and HF, probably mostly between about 2 and 4 the afternoon on the 23rd. Anyway, we're finishing up some of the verbiage for the announcements. So I'll put that out on the reflector in the next day or two. You know, I've been hearing so much about the Raspberry Pi computer. I finally ordered one. I must say I'm quite impressed with the Raspberry Pi. I got the Pi 4 with 4 gigabytes of RAM, and loaded up the operating system and downloaded some programs. And, for a lot of people, just do, like, email and simple web surfing. That could really be your desktop computer. And I downloaded a graphics program called GIMP. It's comparable to Photoshop. Certainly doesn't have the horsepower of Photoshop, but for simple editing, it works fine. And even has a free office suite. Typed a letter with that, and I was going to print the letter. I was like, oh, this will be fun. I got to set up my printer. I got to download a driver. But it had already pre-configured, and it was no problem printing a document with virtually zero issues. So if anybody is looking for a fun project and an inexpensive computer, you might consider Raspberry Pi. Back to net, $73, AG4VA.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Yeah, the Raspberry Pi is very interesting and a lot of fun. The Arduino is very similar to it. My son gave me a Raspberry Pi here for Christmas a couple of years ago, and I looked at it, and I hadn't messed with it at all, and I did some online searching and couldn't find any projects that caught my eye at all. They all seemed rather middle schoolish. Then one day, I guess what I did is I stumbled across something and realized, oh, I can put this in a model rocket with accelerometers and all this, that, and the other, and, make a tracking device, you know, with a GPS in it as well. I built it, but I never put it into a rocket. I have a friend who was very much into high-power rocketry, but we never put it together and did anything, and he's since left the area, but that kick-started me, and I started messing around with various things. And right now, I've got a Pi 4, like you're talking about, that just sits here in the corner of my desk and runs the ham clock which is a poor man's Geochron, but it does kind of all that and more, but it's just a piece of software. It also runs my 3D printer server. So, and it just sits there very quietly and does its thing, doesn't take up any room, and it's a lot of fun, really neat, and all kinds of stuff you can do with it once you get into it. All right, well, that's the end of our list. Do we have any new check-ins, anybody that's been standing by and hasn't been able to, or rechecks? This is N7IVV. Go ahead.
KO4CLR, recheck.
Okay, Alexi, KO4CLR, go ahead.
I forgot the station that brought it up. Apparently the vacation and popped the electronics on the house while on vacation. I was just wondering if you're still on the air. Was that able to just be quickly reset through the breaker, or was there anything else? KO4CLR, clear.
Yeah, he should be here. KN4SPL, he's still around. N7IBV.
N7IBV, KN4SPL. Yes, it's a arc fault circuit interrupter. It's in it's in all new homes, actually. It's to prevent a fire. It's not as sensitive as a GFCI breaker. I think a GFCI breaker trips at 0.05 milliamps, and I believe a arc fault, an AFCI trips at 0.5 milliamps. So it's again, it is to detect sparks to prevent a fire in a house. But yeah, it's like a GFI. You just find the breaker, reset it, and you're back in operation. KN4SPL.
Okay, thanks for the clarification on that too. It's I had heard about that, but I'd forgotten the difference. That it's that the GFCI is more sensitive. Of course, that's also picking up just moisture. I've had a problem with that with my Christmas lights outside. I had a heavy-duty power strip on it, but it got moisture in it, and it was tripping the GFCI for that circuit. But anyway, Alexi, any follow-on questions there? Go ahead.
No, sir. Thank you for the actually detailed explanation. I appreciate that. Thank you, and you answered everything. KO4CLR back to net.
All right, sir. Well, we'll call it a night. Another short net. And this is N7IVV, and this has been the FARA General Service Net. If anybody wants any more information about this, you can go to our website at w4va.org, or you can send an email directly to faranet@w4va.org. That's F-A-R-A-N-E-T at w4va.org. Stand by.
We had a couple other rechecks. K1HTV.
Yeah, K3FR.
K1HTV recheck.
Okay, it's K3FR, right? And Rich, K1HTV. I can't remember if it's N3FR or it's K3FR. Anyway, go ahead and correct your call because I'm tired and I'm getting old. Go ahead.
Okay, Brad. K7IVV, K3FR. That's Ron. And you have the call right. Just been reading the mail, so I check in real quick here. on two topics. One is the arc fault interrupters. I had a problem with that when I started going higher power here on 2 meters, and I couldn't operate over about 30 watts until I replaced the arc fault interrupter out in my power box. It turns out that the older things were built before about 2010, were a bit more sensitive to RF. The ARL got involved with Leviton, and they modified their circuitry and their components, and significantly improved their RF sensitivity standoff. And the ground fault interrupters are meant to protect people, whereas the arc faults are meant to protect more, as Bob indicated, there is a lot of more power is required to trip them, to prevent arcs and faults from significant current surges. And as far as 2 meters, my 6 meter activity has gone to pretty much because of the we haven't had ESCIP recently, and things haven't been going too well on 6 meters, but have been a fair amount of 2 meter FT8 in the morning, 7 to about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, on 14174 FT8. So it's been pretty active there. Pretty good group of people. Normally you're seeing K1TEO, W1, WZ, AB2BI, and WO2Tango. They're all up in the FN20, FM29, FN31 area, and also NG4C down in the FM16, and actually even new on 2 meters. FM05 from WB4IU out in the middle of South Carolina, or North Carolina. So that's my activity and the way things will go. Perhaps we'll see on Saturday. The Leesburg Air Show is Saturday as well, too, in case anybody's interested in airplanes and Zoom Zooms. They have two aerobatic pilots at this point signed up as demonstrators. And 7IVV, KU3FR.
Which air show is that?
That's the Leesburg Air Show. It will be at the Leesburg Executive Airport there. Over.
Oh, okay, thanks for that. Unfortunately, I've already committed myself to go to a tank, an open house at the tank farm, they call it over here in Noakesville. I mentioned it last week. Americans in War Experience, I think is what the group is called, the organization. Anyway, okay, lots of fun stuff for everybody to do. Saturday's a busy day, so I guess spin the wheel and take your chances and do whatever you want to do. So, Rich, go ahead, K1HTV and 7IVV.
Thanks, Brad. This is K1HTV. You had mentioned your interest in launching some telemetry on a rocket. For those who like to watch rocket launches, the Northern Virginia Association of Rocketry, NOVAR, will have their rocket launch at up in the Meadows, what do they call that, the, where we, I think we did a, we started off a fox hunt up there at the, anyway, it's open to the public, the Great, I guess it's Great Meadow, yeah, the Great Meadow, they have a 380-acre field that they've gotten access to use. It'll be not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, October the 2nd, at 10 a.m., of the rocket launch. And so anybody interested in seeing Rocketeers launch their rockets, October 2nd, Great Meadows, and it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully the weather will be good. That's about it for now. This is K1HTV signing.
Okay, Rich, thanks for that. Before you go, is that high-powered rocketry as well as regular?
I was reading... I'm trying to read. If you just Google novar.org, it'll probably answer the questions. NOVAAR.org. And I'm not sure if they did mention you need to be licensed to do the higher power ones. And I'm not sure if this particular one will have both. I have not read the entire article, but I thought I'd heard somebody talk about rocketry, and that caught my reminded me of the site. So. If you go to that site, you could see they're open. They charge $5 for each high-power flight. So if you're going to fly one of those high-power ones, you need to fork up some money unless you're a member of your association. Anyway, that's it, K1HTV.
Okay, so, yeah, they are doing the high-power, and the high-power ranges from Class E Echo licenses, if you've ever been around rockets. You know, the old Estes rockets, which is still around, use up to size Delta. And then the high-power ones, I mean, they get some serious. I mean, some of these things have got to be cleared by the FAA and can reach 10,000 feet. And that's a serious hobby. I mean, you know, that's in the, well, it's quite impressive to watch that stuff. So
If you've never done it, I recommend it. Anyway, all right, one final call. Any rechecks or check-ins, this is N7IVV. Okay, now we'll call it. And so this is N7IVV, closing the Bacher Amateur Radio Association General Service Net and returning the repeater to normal usage. Have a good evening and a pleasant tomorrow. N7IVV, clear.
Kilo, Oscar, 4, November, Charlie, Yankee, disconnected.
N7IVV, this is KO4CLR, copy.
N7IVV.
Hey, Brad, just your comment there about the rockets. Funny little answering note, I my father in a restaurant for many years, and he had a old Hobart mixer, a large one, 4 model. Wanted to get rid of it. Actually sold it to a guy who lives up in Vienna who does model rocketry, and he was using the Hobart mixer to mix the rocket propellant. He actually had to get ATF clearance for whatever he was using to possess the whatever he was using for his rocket motors. But he actually invited us up to Great Meadows many years ago to watch his rocket fly, and he had to get not only ATF clearance, he had to get FAA clearance for this rocket, and it went, I want to say, almost 19,000 feet, I want to say, over.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a lot of guys do make their own, and, I mean, frankly, there's not that much difference between those kind of mix-your-own rocket engines and fireworks propellants, and they contain, you know, a lot of the same ingredients and are made the same way, and they're not particularly dangerous. You know, you take a few precautions, and you know, the chances of you having an accident are pretty slim when you're making them. But you know, you make your own, and it gives you a much more in-depth appreciation for things like the solid rocket boosters that they used on the space shuttle, and I'm sure the same thing that they're still using on things like, oh, what is it, the Delta, the big Deltas and whatnot that have the boosters, and it's interesting to see that they have a hollow core that runs all the way up, and in some cases they're, you know, it isn't just round, it's shaped sometimes even like a star. And what that does is it allows the propellant to burn more evenly and gives thrust that's more consistent, and it literally burns the entire thing at the same time from the inside out instead of burning from the end. So anyway, interesting stuff. I'd like to see that. Anyway, thanks, Rich. Thanks. Everybody for all the information. I'll have to see what I can pull out for my calendar here soon. KO4CLR and 7IVV, have a good evening.
7-3 is always KO4CLR, clear.
This is K1RA, mobile, I'm listening.
Andy, K1RA, K1HTV in the shack.
Hey, Dad, what are you up to tonight?
Still soldering and drilling holes and connecting things, got power on. Power cable, I got the power pole stuff pretty much wired now in the control unit. Just had a nice talk about rocketry. Brad brought up the topic and about telemetry, using an Arduino or some sort of one of the mini computers for getting telemetry and rockets. And I mentioned, I talked to somebody earlier in the day about rocketry, and the Northern Virginia Association of Rocketry is having a launch on October the 2nd at 10 a.m. up at the Meadows, up in Marshall, is it? So I may swing up there at, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, take a look at the rocket launch. And it reminded me of all the work you did up at Goddard for the rocket launches.
Very cool. I might see if Anna or Amy would like to go up and see that if they're around, if the weather's nice. Yeah, boy, that was a long time ago, back at the Goddard Space Flight Center. Ed Pearson had approached me when I was working at the AMSAT lab, and knew that I was programming computers. I guess it was back in the days of MBASIC. And I'm trying to think what machine it was. It was probably the 8085 North Star single floppy machine that we were playing with back in the day. The old CRT, composite video out. I don't know where you'd gotten it from. But, writing their rocketry tally software for, trying to think they had what their competition was. I think one of their competitions was Max Duration, and then maybe a distance landing to a target, minimum distance landing to target. But, it was fun. I've always thought about going back over there. I'm not sure where Ed Pearson ever ended up, but, I did that for many years. But just leaving Bull Run and Terry's place, we had to make a run up to Frederick. He has someone who had passed away and has a bunch of electronic stuff, test equipment, and parts and pieces, and Arduinos, and stepper motors, and anyway, the son is basically looking to have someone come in and take it all away, so we went up there to see what was there, and left Terry's place, and after talking a little bit about HF contests and other upcoming things, heading home on 55 West Haymarket. Okay, I'm still working your project and putting things together. When's the project going to come to an end? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel?
It's looking more like a box now. The last phase is I've got to fan out some diodes for the bands that require an extra relay to pull in on the second relay box. So I think I'll do a little sub board, one of those green boards, little skinny green boards, on a bunch of diodes vertically, and then just use push pins to push on where I need to activate that relay. Then the actual wiring between the I've got connectorized from the output of the driver board these little single inline connectors. I've got that'll make things a little bit easier on connecting at least two of the switches. And I've got it from the output of these three relays that control nine different outputs. I will be able to, I'm not sure if I'll do wire jumps, probably where they're almost never going to be a change. And then some push pins to various outputs, either the two RCS-10s or the DX engineering box, do that by a push pin. So getting there. I've got to drill a couple holes for the on-off switch, the BCD manual switch, and then I need another one between the Arduino or the K3 BCD data, so with LED, with the appropriate LEDs next to them. So it's getting there. Try to spend a couple hours a day down here and work on that, and there's just so much to it. K1RA, K1HTV.
Yeah, I'm sure someday it'll be done, and you'll reap the benefits of it. I'll be really interested to see how that performs and affects skimming performance, and be able to schedule antennas for different bands throughout the day. It'll be a benefit in the long term. Watching for new DX. Let's see what else is going on. Yeah, I guess that's about it. Been raining on and off as went up to Frederick and came back. It's mainly just kind of foggy here on some of the back roads. Have you looked at the radar? Are we done with rain tonight?
No, I have not. As a matter of fact, I probably should bring it up. And looked at it earlier in the day, and we had a shower come by, and then that kind of disappeared, and then haven't looked at it since then. I guess I can bring it up. Wouldn't take much to, if I can find the URL for it. I thought I had it up there, right near the top. Where's the weather? I don't see it here. There it is. It's right at the farthest right one. Let us see what's on the radar. Wonder Map. Still painting a picture. It's not doing anything. Come on, Wonder Map. Must be a lot of people looking at it. There we go. In the area, there's a lot of stuff west of us. Let me put it into motion, see if it's coming towards us. are going away from us. A lot of stuff down from Charlotte. So it's basically traveling from south to north, and we're in a dry spot. Let me zoom out a little bit. Yeah, it's basically south to north, not even much eastern drift. It's all over the Shenandoah Mountains, mountain range, and a little batch over D.C. going into Maryland up to Carroll County now. But we're in the middle of a dry area, but it's pretty much due north, south to north. I question, Anita, on the data that comes from the Spark SDR, and I use to feed RxClus, one of the four nodes, I use an RxClus. Once an hour at 6 after, it stops sending data until I simply hit a carriage return. So the question is, what's the easiest way? I guess I can use the Windows feature of, you know, create a little bat file which does nothing more than send a carriage return. If I leave the focus on the RxClus application, all I need is a carriage return either from the manually, which I have to do now, otherwise I don't get any more data from the onto RxClus from the Spark SDR. So what is there available to generate that carriage return? Any ideas? K1RA, K1HTV.
Well, first of all, once an hour, I guess that corresponds to Spark SDR just restarting. Is that right? Didn't we force a once an hour reboot because we were seeing some other issue with Spark SDR locking up for some reason? I think we did that to compensate for you not having to restart Spark SDR. Might be worth pursuing getting the latest version of Spark SDR and then removing the task scheduler that kills all the tasks. You know, we have a task kill and a task start batch file that got around the lockup problem. See if you need to do that. But I believe what's happening is that one of the apps that's being killed during that once an hour